friends. Welcome back to Not Again, the podcast that brings college-level analysis to preschool-level content. I'm one of your hosts, Rebecca.
I'm your other host, Alan.
And today we're talking about Elmo's World, a segment of Sesame Street.
Specifically, the newer version of Elmo's World.
More specifically, the two-hour compilation that we've seen a million times on YouTube.
And we've seen the first 30 minutes of 100 times, not 100, but like several times.
I mean, it's getting there.
And then more of later.
So on YouTube, there is, they long ago discovered this ancient secrets that parents like to put long things on in the background while their children play and stuff just to distract them. So there's 4 hours of super simple songs and 6 hour compilation of Blippi, we'll talk about at some point, and 2 hours of Elmo's World, which inevitably leads into the playlist of like Sesame Street songs that they have with all those weird pop artists. Anyway, actually, most of the pop artists are normal. It's just that one girl group that really freaks me out because they're like singing like smooth jazz with Elmo or whatever. And I'm just like, anyway, so I thought that we should start out with, we're going to start with this. Elmo is not red. That's as far as I'm willing to go on this, okay? He might not be orange, but he's not red. I don't care that the official Sesame Street Wikipedia says Elmo is a red puppet or whatever, okay? He is not true red. And I think that everyone's been fooled because his nose is a very light orange, so in contrast, his fur looks red. Also, I watched like an old episode of Sesame Street from like the 90s, and wow, have those puppets changed over time. You don't realize it, but like if you look at like 1996 Elmo, my goodness.
Well, you don't think about this, but like puppets in use like wear out.
Yeah.
So that, I mean, like it's not like it's the same puppet, you know, it's like there's probably been 15 million Elmos since the beginning. Like,
I don't mean to name drop here, but Sherry Lewis's daughter once came to my school and brought, that's not the name drop, excuse me. Hello. And brought Lamb Chop. There we go. That's the
name drop.
But not the original Lamb Chop, obviously, because the original Lamb Chop was like a sock with some felt on it. And those don't last that long. And so we asked about the original, the OG Lamb Chop, and she said that like the OG Lamb Chop is still there, but she's basically just sitting with like over a water bottle, like on display
like
somewhere.
Like a museum piece.
Yeah.
Like so, under glass.
I still remember that day very clearly when Lamb Chop came out and was like, hi, everybody. And we all just sat and stared. And I so badly wanted to say hi, Lamb Chop. But I was like in awe, like I'd met a celebrity, even though I knew this woman sitting with Lamb Chop in her lap was the one saying stuff.
Yeah, you weren't starstruck when it was the person, but once the puppet came out, you were.
Yes. And I feel like I should look up Sherry Luce's daughter's name. So hold on. I think it's Mallory. Mallory. Awesome. Okay.
Nailed it.
Anyway, the person's name was Mallory. Obviously, Sherry Lewis herself did not come to our school, but Mallory did, and she was great. We did a workshop with puppets, and she showed us how she does ventriloquy. What were we talking about? Puppets. Yeah, so obviously puppets wear out. And
yeah, so it's not the same Elmo. It could be that Elmo's color has not been so constant.
Yeah, and also there are knockoff Elmos and Elmo toys, and obviously the color is not going to be like the same Pantone color every time. I'm just saying that despite the fact that 90% of people on the poll I put on Twitter said that he's red, and only 10% of people, one of whom was me, said that he was orange, so about 9% of people agree with me, he's not red. I'll accept that he's also not orange. I will go with red-orange. If you went to the Crayola box of crayons, let's face it, you wouldn't pull out the one that's called red. You'd pull out the one that's called red-orange. I'm sorry, but I'm sticking to that.
People are going to tweet at you about this, about how wrong you are.
I have made some people angry, but this is the hill I'm going to die on. I'm sorry. So that's that. Now, where I really think we should start is your experience with Sesame Street. Did you watch it at all?
Yeah, we had Sesame Street. I mean, when we were little kids, we didn't have cable at all because my parents didn't really like TV in the house so much. And so PBS was basically our kid. So a lot of my friends would be talking about how they watched whatever it was on Cartoon Network or whatever, and I'd just be like, that sounds great. Like, I didn't have anything to say. I mean, friends in, like, second grade. But so, I watched Sesame Street. I watched Sesame Street as a kid. But I don't think I was a super fan of it, really. It was just, like, if I was available to watch TV at the time and it was on.
Yeah, like, so I think that that's – in my house, we liked Sesame Street. But my memories of it are so faded that I guess – like, let's put it this way. I remember sitting down and watching The Magic School Bus more vividly than I remember watching Sesame Street.
Same. Magic School Bus was more fun.
We should probably do an episode on it. But I mean, we're doing lots of retro episodes eventually. But – I do remember seeing it. I loved the little, like, claymation sequences. I loved those Martian puppets that went, yep, uh-huh. Like, I liked those guys. And I liked Elmo. And I found out, it was like a sense of betrayal, but I found out much later in life that my mother does not. She found him obnoxious. But I thought he was cute. I don't anymore. I'm suddenly on my mother's side, so the betrayal has lifted. But that's just from watching him again and again and again. But we did like Sesame Street. I loved Big Bird because he was a big bird. And we also were fans of the Muppets. My mom obviously had seen like the original Muppet show, but we were exposed to the Muppets through their movies.
I think I related the most to Telly. I don't know what that says about me. There could be like a BuzzFeed quiz, like what Sesame Street character are you? I feel like I'd get Telly on that one.
That's so specific. Like, I don't even know if, like, a lot of people will have an image come to mind when they think Telly. Why Telly?
I don't know.
Does Telly have a personality?
Yeah. He's a little bit, like, withdrawn, and he likes triangles and, like—
You just reminded me. I don't care about Telly. Forget Telly. But I loved Super Grover and Cookie Monster, obviously. But, like, just because I wanted to be Cookie Monster. And now that I'm an adult, I am, because no one can stop me from driving to the store and buying cookies. But— Super Grover was great. We loved Super Grover and the Count, and they had a Passover special or a Hanukkah special where we learned they went to Israel, and I think they made sufganiyot, or maybe this is a fever dream I had.
Or it was like a cassette tape, like a video cassette that you could buy.
Yeah, and maybe it was the Muppets. I don't know. But all I know is that anytime any show acknowledged that Jews existed, I felt a kinship with them, and it heartened me. So even though I don't like the Rugrats acknowledged that Judaism existed. And we're actually going to talk about this. This is a transition. I should just put it.
This is a transition.
I found a transition. They look like me. There was an article that I read in teacher school, I feel like. I think it was one of the articles I read when I was studying to be a teacher for the teacher certification program about kids' books, about like picture books. It was about how it was kind of a privilege thing. Like, if you can think back to your childhood and say, yes, all or most of the picture books I read had characters that looked like me, you are in a position of privilege, because for a long time, that wasn't true. Like, there was The Snowy Day, which you should all buy. It's an adorable book, and we have it. And I immediately took it away because Warren tried to eat it, but he might look at it now that he's older. But for the most part, there were white children. And there was an article about how somebody went to read to a class of young kids, and the book did not feature a white child. It featured a child of color. And one of the kids came up to him after and was like, they look like me. And just like the fascination that they had with seeing a character and what that does for kids, it validates them. And so one of the things that Elmo's World does, and one of the things that shows that acknowledged Jews did for me, is they diversify the human cartoons that they use. So it's not just a bunch of white kids. And also, I suppose they have the live action videos, right?
Yeah.
So in the live action videos, they go all kinds of
families.
I think even different countries.
Yeah,
maybe.
Yeah, maybe, but different families, different family structures.
Yeah. They even acknowledge that gay people exist, and that's wow. I mean, they acknowledge gay people exist much more readily than Disney does. And so yeah, so as far as like checking the box of do they look like me, Elmo's World and I suppose Sesame Street by extension has. Actually, Sesame Street's kind of – I keep interrupting myself, but like Sesame Street's kind of always been at the forefront of that because they had diverse characters.
Yeah, like Gordon and Maria.
Yeah.
And yeah.
So Sesame Street has always clearly prioritized showing the diversity of people. One of the episodes episodes of Elmo's World is about people. He's like, what am I thinking about today? People. And it's like, well, that's kind of a broad subject, Elmo. And then he has to Google people. And it's, yeah, we'll get there. But so as much as I'm going to complain about this show, it also does a couple things right. And one of those things is diversity. And so when I saw a show like Rugrats acknowledge Passover, acknowledge Hanukkah, I believe they also did Kwanzaa when Susie became a thing. It you feel seen. And that feeling is so validating. And so I'm glad that they do that. But yes, I liked Sesame Street. Elmo's World was a newer edition, so I didn't see a lot of it, but I only saw the old version. So Elmo's World got a revamp. What season was it? Like 47?
That was when that's the new.
Yeah, Elmo's that's the World. Revamp of Elmo's World.
Elmo's World, yeah. Okay. Well, I looked it up, and it was season 47.
Oh, wow, I remembered. The fact that there are 47 seasons of Sesame Street boggles the brain, but they deserve it. Great show, whatever. But so it got a revamp, and this is what we're seeing. So the old Elmo's World, it started with a cartoon crayon drawing of, like, Elmo in an apartment, and then, like,
his goldfish crayon drawing.
His goldfish was real in the old version.
Well, there was a crayon drawing, and then it turned into a
everything
real.
Became real, and he was, like, drawing on his furniture and stuff, and, like, it was just like, hey, look, it's Elmo. And then now it's, like, Blue's Clues. Like, it starts by looking at an actual apartment building, which we have to get to. There's even a dumpster outside, so I guess Oscar the Grouch is around, right? I loved Oscar, too, but that's only because I was really grouchy and still am. You go into his apartment, and everything becomes kind of crayon, but it's definitely much more like CG. We have to remember that he's in an apartment. This will be important later, but just remember he's in an apartment. So we are seeing the revamped Elmo's World, and Elmo has sold out, not by any effort of Elmo's, I think, but just because Elmo quickly kind of skyrocketed as a popular character, if you like.
Yeah, it became a popular toy, and there was, like, the whole craze about the Tickle Me Elmo thing. And so, I mean, I remember Sesame Street as a kid, Elmo not even being that big of a deal. Like, Big Bird was a big big part of the show, Oscar.
We should look up if Elmo was even, like, part of the original cast, because I swear he wasn't. There was this guy who, like, made puppets, and then he, like, I don't know. I swear that Elmo was in, like, I saw, like, a documentary once that I should have watched before doing this episode. But Elmo's story is interesting. I will look it up. Yeah. So Elmo's first appearance was in 1980. Oh, my God. That's already season 11?
What was it?
69?
69.
How old is Sesame Street?
1969.
My goodness.
So
anyway.
What is it, 52 years then?
Wow.
Okay.
All right.
Good for them.
Well,
Mazel tov.
I doubt that they have the OG voice actor, but he was a cool dude. So he wasn't even an original character, but his popularity skyrocketed, and now we have Elmo's World. All right, let's get into our talking points. Wow, Elmo has quite a family. I'm on the wiki still, and he has an Aunt Jill, a cousin named Jesse, a cousin named Chester. This must be the Elmo extended universe, where they have, like a cousin Mimsy?
Elmo's assemble.
Yes. Elmo family. We got to go kind of be high-pitched over here. All right. Yeah, so let's get to our talking points. So you have a thing from the wiki that you wanted
to... Yeah, well, what I wanted to talk about is how every episode, skit of Elmo's World, the new Elmo's World, follows a five-point structure, and it never deviates from this as near as I can tell. It's just there's the opening song, which doesn't change, and then it leads right into guess what Elmo's thinking about today, wondering about today, and it's just anything, right? It's babies,
numbers, people, bees, gardening, which is two separate things, I think. One day he's wondering about bees, the other day he's wondering about gardening. You love the gardening episode because of the game he plays where he's like, what goes in a garden? And there's a bee, a flower, and a penguin.
I love that. Okay, we'll get...
but we'll get to that.
You'll get to the game part.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's just a topic, whatever it is.
Some of them very broad, like people or numbers, yes. But yeah.
And then he decides that he's going to look it up. And his new best friend, his old best friend was a goldfish, but his new best friend is a smartphone named Smarty. And Smarty looks up what he's thinking about and shows him a little video.
And this is to replace the email segment that he had in the original Elmo's World. He used to get an email on his computer.
Or was it even just mail? Did it switch?
Steve on Blue's Clues got mail. Okay. I believe that Elmo was...
He was more advanced.
By the time Elmo's World existed,
yeah.
He was already on email.
Okay.
But even now, email is not recognizable to the kids.
That's true.
The kids these days only know smartphones.
They will only know that terror when they reach a 9-to-5 job.
Yes, yeah, so they basically swapped it out.
So Smarty helps him look up a video about whatever it is he's thinking about. Elmo is free reign of just a topic. And so Smarty shows him a video pertaining to his theme, and then they play a game, and the game usually has something to do with the topic. So he was talking, they did a video about babies, and the game was there was three different animals, and he had to match the three different baby versions of the animal to the animal. This sort of thing happens a lot in these kind of educational kid shows, and it sort of always turned me off to them, because even as a little kid, I knew color matching and I knew kind of like form and shape a little bit. So they always, I would never accidentally just go, I'm going to drag the seal over to the kangaroo. But as part of these games, they always get stuff wrong. And I guess it's to show that you can get stuff wrong and it's not a big deal and that's a good lesson. But as a little kid, that always turned me off. I'm just like, what are you doing? Just like match they're the same color. Like
same with Blue's Clues, where yeah. Steve would be like, the disembodied preschooler's voice would be like, a clue. And he'd be like, really? Where? And he'd turn around and there'd be a giant blue paw print right in front of his face. And he'd be like, I don't see it. And it's like, okay, but you do, right? Like you are talking down to children, which is something we've talked about before. Yeah. We don't like that. Don't insult children's intelligence. Even preschoolers know that the seal baby does not belong with the lion, okay? I think it is to make them feel smarter than the character on the TV, but it doesn't work that way, I guess.
I don't know. Maybe it works for some people, but for me, I'd always just like, what are you doing? Like, just get it right.
Get it together, Elmo.
Get it together, Elmo. And so they do like a matching game. And so they match the lion to the lion cub eventually, and the seal to the seal pup to the seal eventually, and yep. the Joey to the kangaroo eventually. And they almost never get it right on the first time. How can, like, you can't get one right on the first time? You think chance at this point would dictate that you get one right on the first time. Anyway, that's the game on the theme. Though one time, you're going to have to help me with this, because one time they just play tic-tac-toe, and yep. I don't, how does that relate to any theme?
Elmo needs a friend to play tic-tac-toe with him.
Ah, so the theme is friendship.
Yep, he's thinking about friends.
Okay, well, I guess that sort of works, but really tic-tac-toe, And his friend is just his phone.
Yes, Elmo has no friends.
He has no friends. He didn't, like, use his phone to call a friend.
All the other puppets were like, Elmo, you can have your own segment over there behind closed doors. We're gonna go hit the bar. Like, see you later.
The good news, Elmo, is you're gonna get screen time. The bad news is nobody likes you.
Sorry, Elmo. Elmo wants to have friends. Oh no. Why don't you think about friends with this, this phone? Okay, can I name it? No, its name is Smarty. Go, Elmo. I don't know what I'm doing.
We're being a little too hard on
I'm
Elmo.
I'm being too hard on Elmo. I'm sorry, I was distracted imagining Grover and Fozzie at the bar. So, anyway, yes. And then my favorite segment.
The Noodle Family.
The Noodle Family.
The Noodle Family. So
there used to be just one.
There used to be one, just Mr. Noodle, and he's still around.
Yes, he is.
He's still around, but now he has brothers and
apparently,
cousins and sisters and all that sort of stuff.
At least according to Wikipedia, you said Kristen Chenoweth was Miss Noodle at some point.
And there was another Miss Noodle, too.
There was? Okay, because we've only ever seen Mr. Noodle, his brother Mr. Noodle, his brother Mr. Noodle, his brother Mr. Noodle's father, and his poodle, Schmoodle. So we have only seen the Mr. Noodles in this Mr. Noodle universe.
In this Mr. Noodle universe. But apparently there are two Ms. Noodles.
And by the way, I'm going to call it the Noodle Dimension.
It is the Noodle Dimension.
Because going back to what I said, remember I said that this is going to be important? You go into Elmo's apartment, and then Elmo just takes it as a given that if he looks out one window of his apartment, he just sees another universe. Just he looks onto a dimension all on its own. It's definitely not out in the street on the alleyway next to his apartment building that you get to see when you enter the apartment through the window the first time in the opening sequence. So he's just like, yeah, this is that window I open where these other people live. And like, we are separate but the same. They celebrate Thanksgiving, but they never come into my world. But they seem to be aware of it. It's just this clown dimension with mimes and clowns that sometimes do silly things. And they live there. And the Noodle Family has a house, a doghouse, a couple trees, a fence, and occasionally some other things that they need. The house seems to provide whatever they happen to need at the moment, and they just live there. They only seem to exist to answer Elmo's asinine questions, and that's quite a bleary existence, a bleak existence for the Noodles, especially since apparently they reproduce by budding, since there just seems to be more of them every once in a while.
Let's not bring in noodle reproduction.
Listen, I'm going to bring in noodle reproduction.
You don't want to open the window at the wrong time.
Can I leave that in?
I'm just your audience.
All right. No. Whoa. Don't put this on me.
Okay.
We're doing this together.
All right.
When I said I have an idea for a podcast, you said, okay, let's do it. Not okay, do it.
You're the one on Twitter. Okay, that's what I meant.
All right. Oh, okay. I see. So I'm taking the blame for this.
You're going to get all the angry tweets, not me.
Fine. All right. Well, you go back to live under your rock. Anyway, all I'm saying is that Elmo seems perfectly okay with just having this window into another world. And there are a lot of Mr. Noodles now. And you were saying something earlier. We'll probably go into it more in our Blippi episode that will inevitably happen because Warren says Blippi as much as he says mommy at this point. But when a man, like a grown man, does like a children's television show, he is stigmatized in really horrible ways where a woman wouldn't be. Mr. Noodle falls into that category because a lot of the Mr. Noodles are male and grown men as well. And they are there to entertain children. I wonder why did that start with like John Wayne Gacy? Like,
I don't know.
This idea that like men who dress up to entertain children are predators?
I think it just harkens back to just regular old patriarchy where it's just like the women watch the children and a guy who wants to hang around with children, maybe there's something wrong with him.
Hello, this is our children's podcast. We're talking about Elmo and John Wayne Gacy. Enjoy.
Yeah, but it's just, you know, and it could be a little homophobia too. Like it's just like, oh, hey, like that person, he's exhibiting a female trait of wanting to be near children. And then that got conflated with, you know.
The patriarchy needs to come down.
Yeah, whatever. The patriarchy sucks. Anyway. Yes.
But I actually think that the Mr. Noodles are doing an interesting thing. So there's a closing song. That's the last segment.
Oh, well, yeah. The Noodle Family does a skit on the topic. One or more noodles do a skit on the topic. Or the poodle.
There's only one Mr. Noodle at a time except for the one episode on Father's Day. I'm sure hoping there's an episode on Mother's Day.
I'm sure there is.
Where Mr. Noodle is there with, quote, Mr. Noodle's father, but it is, in fact, just the same dude, but with, like, a beard over his bow tie. And it's like, that's pretty funny, honestly. It's just like, there's Mr. Noodle and Mr. Noodle's father, and he's just still the
same
dude.
They're cute enough skits. I mean, they're clowns. They're mimes or something.
I say they're clown-mime hybrids because they do have, like, they don't have clown makeup, but they are in silly clothing. But they also have the kind of, like, accentuated cheeks and eyes that mimes use because they use, like, they can't talk, right? So their facial expressions are their way of communicating. And so that's why mimes are portrayed with like whited out faces, but like red cheeks and lips, because they need their facial expressions to be as apparent as possible in order for you to understand what they're thinking and feeling, because they can't say it. And so they have that going for them. Like they have rouged cheeks and stuff like that. So they're clown mimes or mime clowns.
And that's a skill. I know it's not an in-demand skill, but like they can do fun skits, right? Like that's just something clowns can do. Yeah. So
you said that something like there. I was like, wow, there's a ton of Mr. Noodles now. And you're like, well, there isn't a lot of work for clowns these days. So, yes, but it's true. They do a thing.
Yeah,
so
they do a thing and it's usually, you know, a cute enough skit. And then there's the closing song. Now, the closing song doesn't have anything to do with the theme. It never changes and it takes up a pretty long period of time.
Oh, God, yes. And I see it in my nightmares.
Yes. And it's the happy dance.
When he learns something new, he has to do his happy dance. And during this segment, you see Elmo's legs a lot. And I don't know why it bothers me that Elmo isn't just portrayed from the waist up like a puppet. But first, when he does yoga, first of all, there's an episode on yoga. I'm not going to touch that one, but I feel like there's some things to say about it from people who are more aware than I am. When you see Elmo's legs, something breaks in my brain. Like Kermit, I've seen Kermit's legs. I see Miss Piggy's legs. I don't know why it bothers me that I see Elmo's legs.
Well, the happy dance in particular is disconcerting because like he's dancing and his movements are unnatural.
Yes.
So there's a lot of like dancing puppets and sort of stuff, but it usually has like a person behind it doing the movements.
This might even be CG.
Like, oh, it might even be not real.
I don't even know how much of it is puppetry anymore, but that I'm not going to, I'm not an expert. So,
So it's just kind of like herky jerky, unnatural movements. And it's just sort of like, I don't know. It's like,
It's obnoxious.
And it's obnoxious.
And so for a long time, this was my whale scene. If you don't understand the whale scene, you need to listen to our Finding Nemo episodes, probably the second Finding Nemo episode, because they see the whale at the end of the movie. Yeah. So like that's episode 9. But even when I wasn't paying attention, as soon as he started singing the Happy Dance song, it like burrowed its way into my consciousness in a way that felt very Dune-esque. It was very uncomfortable. And I don't know if things burrow in your unconsciousness in Dune. I meant like sci-fi, like Animorphs, you know, the little alien slug things, the Yurfs. What are they called? The Yurds?
Read Animorphs.
You never read Animorphs?
I didn't read anything when I was a kid.
Why did you reference it the other day?
Because I knew what it was.
Yurks, I think they're called.
Yurks.
Look, they're called
something
stupid.
We're not going to look that one up.
No, I'm not. Just, they're called Smurfs. When a Smurf crawls into your ear and just burrows in there, and I've never read Dune. I will admit that I tried and got bored within 2 pages. I'm so sorry. I'll just assume there are little burrowing things in Dune somewhere. I know there are sandworms.
There are enormous burrowing things
in
Dune.
Yes, they're enormous. So pretend that my brain is sand. And the Happy Dance song is a giant burrowing sandworm from Dune. There. Okay. Analogy completed. So it's bad. But what I want to talk about is the lesson that you alluded to. I found an actual lesson. No, this is an actual lesson, so we're going to keep the applause going. Okay. So this is something that occurred to me only because I saw this a billion times. So this podcast is all about what we discover, not from one watching of something, but from watching it so many times that you're able to notice details that you don't notice the first couple times. And for this, it was that the lesson that you were trying to say earlier of it's okay to get stuff wrong is an actually good lesson, but it's executed better with Mr. Noodle than it is with Elmo not knowing that a seal doesn't come from a lion. Because Mr. Noodle, despite being a clown mime, is an adult. And he consistently gets things wrong. What happens is, let's take an example. Let's do the yoga episode, okay? So what happens is Elmo says, Mr. Noodle, do you know how to blank? And Mr. Noodle nods confidently. Just, yes, absolutely. But he doesn't. And so Elmo says, do you know how to do yoga? And Mr. Noodle nods. And then he goes to hula hoop or something, right? The disembodied child voices that seem to follow every kids show host ever are like, no, Mr. Noodle, don't do that. And Elmo says, try again, Mr. Noodle. It's something that you do with poses. And so Mr. Noodle goes inside his house and comes out and he's doing a catwalk model thing, right? Like he's posing as, you know, and they're like, no, you have to try again, right? And so they get him closer and closer with little hints. But here's what doesn't happen. They don't say like, you're wrong. And like Mr. Noodle gives up, or even becomes particularly distraught. He seems disappointed when he gets it wrong, but as soon as they give him a chance to try again, he's like, eager to do it. And this is so important to me as a former teacher, because the fact of the matter is that learning is a process of making mistakes. I had this stupid banner in my classroom that didn't make a lick of difference because grades exist. But what I told my students was, learning is getting it wrong until you get it right. Nobody picked up an instrument and immediately started playing concertos. You need to make mistakes. But the education system in this country punishes mistakes horribly. Every time you make a mistake on any kind of assignment, your grade goes down. So you're supposed to be learning in school, but the one thing that you need to do to learn, you're punished for consistently. And so, of course, by the time they reached me, their eyes were dead and they didn't want to try anymore and they called themselves stupid consistently. But what happens with Mr. Noodle is he gets stuff wrong confidently. And he just brushes it off. And he hears people say, no, that's not right. And it doesn't hurt him. And I think on top of that, he's an adult that children are correcting, and so he's demonstrating that, which doesn't matter because then they're going to enter the American education system and be told that getting it wrong is bad. But it's a good lesson, even if it will eventually be stamped out of them by life. I find it very hard not to go off on tangents about the education system, but these are educational shows. This one is going to be on the Daniel Tiger side, like specifically Elmo's World. We said Sesame Street was too, but like Elmo's World is even closer to the Daniel Tiger side of the spectrum. It's just refreshing to see somebody get stuff wrong until they get it right. And then they're like, yay, you did it. You know, and to have the kids be like, no, Mr. Noodle, not that. You know, like they get to be in the driver's seat being like, we know and you don't. And I think that is the goal. I think that's the goal of Steve not seeing the paw print. I think that's the goal of Elmo not knowing that a penguin doesn't go in a garden. It's to make kids feel like they're in the driver's seat a little bit and they're the knowledgeable ones a little bit because they get talked down to a lot. Ironically, they try to put them in the driver's seat by talking down to them a lot. Like, they really insult their intelligence as far as, like, does a penguin go in a garden? No. Everyone knows this. No. Just no. But there's a couple of things that you want to talk about. So the penguin in the garden is one. I want to talk about the craft one after that. That's, and then we'll probably be close to done. But
I
yeah.
I think so. I think that'll round us out. Okay. So it was the gardening episode, and there were three things that he could choose to put in a garden, and the kids or Smarty would tell him whether he was right or wrong. And so he picks a flower and puts it in the garden, and they're like, yeah, awesome. And then he picks a bee, and he also puts that in the garden, and they're like, that also works. And then the penguin is left over and just left out. And I don't know why I felt bad for that penguin.
I wanted to let you know that there's a different episode, I think the counting episode, where there are a bunch of penguins on an ice floe that get hats. And I like to think that one of those five penguins was the one that was almost put in a garden but wasn't. And it made it home to its family and got a hat out of the deal as well.
All right, we'll have to check the timeline to see which one came first.
Yes, true. And the hat said, I went to Elmo's World and all I got was almost put in a garden or something like that. The craft episode, I think, had a very subtle message for children. Elmo wanted to know what garbage he could use to make crafts. And so they were looking at a cartoon kitchen and he saw like an empty jar and he's like, can this be used for crafts? And the kids are like, yeah. And then he saw a paper towel roll and he's like, can this be used for crafts? And the kids were like, yeah.
And then, that was a really enthusiastic, yeah.
Well, the kids do that, you know? And then he points to a very living, breathing cat and is like, can this be used for crafts? And they were like, no, Elmo. And I feel like he was like, he should have been like, good, remember that. Stop trying to put hot glue on your dog.
I like that the animated cat was just all like rolled its eyes and like walked away after that. Just like, don't try to use me for crafts, Elmo. Yeah.
It acted very much like a real cat. I feel like they very specifically were like, can living things be used for crafts? No. That was the real lesson, was not like, you can make things with anything, but just like, don't hurt the cat. I wish Warren would learn that lesson. Mm. Things can get hurt. We're still working on that one with him. Warren says, Elmo, the baby episode is his favorite because he runs over to his baby brother every time, which is very difficult for us because he's very enthusiastic about his brother. But he loves saying baby. I mean, honestly, we still have to be happy that he was happy when he initially saw the baby, but he didn't like after a week go like, okay, I'm done with this. Like, take it away. You know, he's still very excited to have a baby brother. And so that's good. But he likes the baby episode. He also likes bees. There's a bee episode.
Yep.
So
he likes bees in nature as well. Yep. He calls lots of flying insects bees.
Yes, he does. He calls flying insects bees. He says ants. He finds ants and then he crushes them. And then he says, bye bye, ant. And I'm like, and I think he says, bye bye, ant. See you soon. And I'm like, no, you won't. But that's fine.
Don't break his heart.
Yeah. No, I mean, like, ants all look the same. So as far as he knows, he squishes one and it just reappears somewhere else. So I have no reason to tell him that he has killed that ant. But it's just kind of funny that he says, see you soon now after everything. Just bye bye, ant. See you soon. And it's like, well, okay. Every bird is now a chicken, although he still says bird sometimes.
Yeah, he still
too.
Knows bird, and
this is great. There is a field by our house where some wild turkeys live. I kid you not. They just hang out there. Being from Los Angeles, I'm just like, what? Like, there was one time a while back where I had to brake kind of hard while I was driving because there were two turkeys crossing the road over to the field where they live. And I was just like, is this real life? There was also a time when it was early morning and I was at work and I pulled into the parking lot and I giant rabbit the size of a house, like, scurried by. And I was like, well, that was weird. And then an owl swooped past in the other direction. And I was like, I am in Narnia. What just happened? Like, an owl.
It's probably after the rabbit. Probably couldn't carry it.
Yeah, no. The owl probably, like, passed over the rabbit, went, could I? No. I'll find something smaller. Like, the rabbit was as big as the owl. But I'm not used to seeing, like, nature. Then again, we had lizards at our school growing up and rattlesnakes, but the lizards were more common. And whenever we had a visitor from out of town, they'd be like, oh my God, a lizard. And we'd be like, yeah, they're everywhere. Like, what are you freaking out about? So I guess it depends on what climate you're in. But anyway, there are turkeys. And as we pass by them, Warren goes, chickens. And I'm like, yep, big chickens.
Good enough.
Yeah, they're very close. Yeah,
we don't need to get all that specific, right?
Absolutely
now.
Not. He has schemas. We're good. Anyway, so Elmo, he's orange-ish. He's not true red. He's now obnoxious to me, whereas before he was not. I think his story is cool. I think that you should look up the documentary on Sesame Street that maybe gave the origins of Elmo. I saw it so long ago, probably on like 60 Minutes or PBS or something. I still like Sesame Street. I remember being disappointed when Elmo's World took over because Elmo's World is not Sesame Street, you know, with their little skits and their different animation styles and the children and the Muppets. And it's just Elmo. It's just Elmo.
I remember that as well because every episode of Sesame Street is its own thing, right? It's every time it's different. And to have one thing happen the same time every time kind of just cheapens it a little.
This isn't like SNL with Target Lady who comes back again and again. It's supposed to be different. It's supposed to be you don't know what to expect. I agree completely. Yeah. It's like when you expect Elmo's World, it's like, okay, well, we'll turn this off now. Like, it's not Sesame Street anymore. And I liked Elmo. I did. I thought he was cute. And it still didn't matter. I wanted to see Sesame Street. I didn't want them to be like doing audience marketing and being like, oh, Elmo sells well, so we're going to put in more Elmo. Like, it kind of, I don't know, it felt disillusioning.
Yeah. I wanted the cartoon where the pinball counted to 18 or whatever, right?
Yeah. I wanted my favorite, honestly, I think just because I was a kid and I didn't understand how anything worked, was when they had the number of the day would, like, they'd be in, like, a park or something, and it would, like, pop out of a bench and then sink back in and then pop out of the slide and sink back in. And I don't remember if it was claymation or animated. It was too long ago I can't remember now. It's fuzzy in my brain. But whatever it was cool the way that it kind of, like, popped in and out of existence to me. And I looked forward to that. But it didn't happen every time, right? Because you never knew what to expect. So we will see this again and again and again because Ari likes it as well as Warren. Ari likes Elmo's World. And so we're going to keep seeing the same 2 hours of Elmo's World. And for that reason, thank you for listening. Thank you for existing. And thank you for helping us to maintain our marbles for just one more week. We are on Twitter at Not Again Pod. And by we, as Alan pointed out, I mean me. I'm on Twitter. I'm also on Twitter at Bex Goose. I just have two Twitter accounts. What are you going to do? Pretend that Alan sees the Not Again ones. He does, because I can show them to him. And we are probably never going to be on Facebook again. I just, like, I don't even know why I created a Facebook group, but I don't want to. So I'm already taking care of other social media. But you can find us there. You can find our support sites. Ko-fi.com/notagain is our, like, podcast-specific support site. Otherwise, patreon.com/potatolady. You'll get bonus content there. Or you can become a member on my Buy Me a Coffee page, but that's more kind of like for Potato Lady podcast reviews. It's all in the description, as usual. Probably going to take the Facebook link out. Anyway, we'll catch you next time. Until then, I'm Rebecca.
And I'm Alan.
Bye, friends.
Bye.